Reasonable. It's the reasonable. It's the reasonable. It's the reasonable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule. And today we hear from the much celebrated chef, Sebastian Mazzola. The 40-year-old Argentine is currently traveling the world, creating his pop-up cuisine through Cooking in Motion, a company he set up with his partner, Susie Villarico, who is a sake sommelier. Just over 10 years ago, in 2013, they formed their traveling culinary company and set out to cover the world leading destinations as nomads, driven by their passion for Nikkei cuisine and their desire to share it. Mazzola was a chef for more than 3 years in Barcelona and also worked as creative head in the early days of Pacta and 41. But right now, Sebastian joins us live on the line from Japan, where he's just about to do a big event this weekend. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining us.
Konbanwa, Jo, as we say here in Japan when we are in the late night. Pleasure to speak to you.
It's a pleasure to have you. I know you've got a lot on at the moment with a big event happening on Friday. What's the plan for Friday? What's taken you to Japan?
Yeah, so I've been here for a little bit over a month. This is my last stop. I'm in Awaji Island. It's an island in the middle of Japan, a very small island. Actually, it's quite similar to my hometown, Ibiza. And in this occasion, I'm doing a dinner at the Zen Hotel. It's a resort for wellness. So they practice the cuisine that is called Shoshin Ryori, which is basically the temple cuisine, which is a little bit more complicated style of vegan cuisine because they don't use sugar. There's not use of flours, no fried food. So a very healthy and conscious food. So I'm adapting my style of cuisine for this style called Shoshin Ryori. And I'm doing it with a menu that is interpretation from many dishes from around the world.
Wow. Sounds amazing. Sounds delicious. Where do we sign up? I mean, so your culinary journey is, you know, pretty much as adventurous as your dishes. Can you tell us a little bit about how your nomadic chef lifestyle has influenced your approach to cooking? And the experiences that you bring to each kitchen, like you're going to be doing this weekend?
I mean, I think traveling for anyone, it's like a learning experience. So for me, traveling around the world, cooking in different places, in different countries, in different cultures, learning from new ingredients and new recipes, it's like opening my cookbook, so I can create new things depending on the occasion, wherever I go, and depending on the situation. For example, in this case, it's a vegan cuisine that they didn't put me limits on the style, so I'm bringing a little bit influences from around the world. But sometimes it's concepts very defined, like as you said, Nikkei cuisine, which is probably my specialty. But I can also sometimes cook Italian food, Spanish food, Peruvian, Mexican styles. And the thing that I'm traveling around the world and meeting these cultures allows me to do an interpretation much more deeper of those cultures.
I mean, obviously, the constant traveling allows you to be a bit more creative, as you just said, with the wide selection of different ingredients that you get to work with on a permanent basis. But, you know, would you say that your repertoire is constantly changing? And how do you find it, you know, to consistently but constantly evolve and adapt? You know, you're always on your toes.
Yeah, actually, it's quite the challenging right now. I'm doing the preparation for this menu. Every dish that I'm doing, that I'm serving on this Friday, it's all new dishes. So it's a constant challenge, but the challenge also as the same as traveling, it makes you grow. Sometimes, you know, you need to really put yourself out there to understand your limitations and also to learn from mistakes. And then from those things you overcome and you can do things better. So, I'm constantly looking for that challenge to drive me forward.
What do you think is the big part of your story that maybe contributed or made you this way? Always looking for those challenges, always looking for sort of new ways to interpret different, you know, communities and cultures around the world.
No, actually, it's funny because my dream when I was 15 was to travel around the world. That was my dream. And then I thought maybe if I can cook, I can travel around the world because I will always find a job. Everybody needs to eat, right? So then I started the cooking, and I actually super fall in love with the profession, with taking care of the people, you know, the reactions that you get when you do something right. And after many years of training in restaurants around the world, I got the chance to put myself out there and create this company, as you said, with my partner, Susie Villarrico, which we are both travelers and nomads. She's from Denmark, but living in Spain. I'm from Argentina, living in Spain. So we've been always traveling around the world. So creating the company allowed us to chase our dream, that is traveling around the world while doing what we are passionate about, that is sharing food and drinks with people.
What was the opportunity that came up to be able to create this company together? How did it evolve?
The last restaurants that I was running in Barcelona was all the group for Albert Adrià. So there were four or five restaurants, very gastronomic. Being the head of creativity and the kind of the head of cuisine in all of them, I was constantly meeting restaurateurs, restaurant owners, chefs from all around the world. So meeting all these people that was actually in that time coming to see us also opened the doors for the future, for me to be able to travel around the world and go visit them. And then I got the opportunity to do pop-ups in so many countries because they knew who I was, what I was doing, what I was capable of. So they were very willing to allow me to use their kitchens or to invite me to do special events or even training for their staff. So there are many varieties of the work that we do.
How much planning do you have to do before you arrive to each destination, or how familiar can you become to walking into these new scenarios in advance? Or do you like the unknown? Do you like turning up to somewhere and not quite knowing how it's all going to play out?
Yeah, that's actually a funny question, because sometimes you do a lot of planning and you think that everything is under control, and when you arrive to the destination, you realize that it's totally out of control. And sometimes it goes the other way around. You know, you arrive to a place with very limited time, knowing that it's going to be complicated, and suddenly everything is where it should be, and the event is it's a perfect flow. But yeah, usually I try to prepare myself as much as possible because I like to be very perfectionist, and usually it's not only about the food. You know, we like to take care also about the ambience of the dinner or lunch. So the decoration, the lighting, the plates, the flow of where the people is coming in from, how much time do we have? You know, like there's a lot of details to really create an amazing experience. So we try to be as much prepared as we can.
How do you stay calm when things are not going your way in those kinds of scenarios?
There's sometimes moments of like seconds of panic attack, but after so many years of traveling and doing this, you know, like I know that moment is going to pass and we just need to continue and find a way to solve it. So I become really good at solving complications very quickly. And actually, as I said, you know, usually those complications make you stronger and make you grow. So once you keep doing it and keep doing it, it gets easier.
Can you give us any examples?
Can
you give us any examples of a place you've like turned up to and maybe something didn't go quite according to plan?
Well, I mean, for example, a few events events that we have done in Moscow, the language is quite a complication. So sending ingredient lists and finding out that when you arrive to the place, the ingredients that you order is completely opposite, and then going out to the markets in the streets in minus 15, minus 20, trying to sort out those ingredients is... has been some very complicated situations. But as usually, we usually try to, but most, I would say, it's not nice for me to say, but usually we do it really good.
Did you have a few vodkas to warm up afterwards?
Yeah, actually now for the last almost 10 years, my favorite drink, and that's what we work with, because besides traveling around the world doing events, we also have our company based in Spain, importing and distributing Japanese sake, which is our passion. It's not thing that we do for business, but it's something that we do to support the producers in Japan, because it's very hard. There's a lot of effort in this craft, and there's a lot of passion, and there's a lot of tradition. So we really love to promote the people that we work with in Japan, because it's really an amazing beverage, and we believe that is the best way to accompany the food.
Where did that kind of like passion or obsession with Japan come from? Where did the initial ignition for that come from?
Yeah, actually it was from the last restaurant that I created with Albert, Pacta, as you mentioned. So it was the first Nikkei restaurant to open in Spain, and we were the first restaurant to do sake pairings along with the tasting menu. And in that time for me, sake, well, I mean, of course I had studied Japanese cuisine and I knew about sake, but I didn't really have no idea about the potential of sake as a pairing. Regarding the umami, the amount of flavor profiles it has, the level of sweetness, the low levels of acidity. So in 2013, at the end of 2013, when we opened Pacta, that was like a discovery. And right after, when we set up, when we opened our company and we set up from our own adventure, we visit Japan for the first time, and then we could realize that even what we thought that it was a lot, it was just the tip of the iceberg. There was a lot, much more to learn. And actually now, 8 years later, we are still discovering constantly new things and new breweries, and there's a whole new generation of young people taking over the breweries and searching for new ways. Also bringing, breaking tradition, but making new ways of create sake, but at the same time trying to save the heritage of the places where they are located. You know, like trying to work with organic farmers, specific kinds of rice that maybe were lost, they're trying to get them back. So these people really, for us, deserve a lot of respect, and we are very, very happy to be able to represent them in Spain.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds, well, I mean, I think sake has obviously grown in popularity in recent years, and specifically on Ibiza. I mean, the first time I really became acquainted with it was when Richie Horton, actually, the DJ, started a night called Enter at Space quite a long time ago now, almost a decade ago. And you know, that was kind of the first time that I tried sake, and I hadn't really heard of it then. And I know that, you know, you've spent some time in Ibiza as well, and you've, according to the New York Times, made some good friends with a group of DJs, and they kind of compared your lifestyle, I think, of sort of showcasing music and food in a similar way. I mean, how do you see the parallels between the two worlds, and how does this kind of contribute, I guess, to your culinary identity?
Yeah, I mean, going back to what you mentioned about Richie, we were also the first ones to help him. Well, Sus especially traveling around him with him in the States, promoting the Enter Sake company when he just started. You know, I have a lot of DJ friends that they really enjoy and love food, and as much as I do with music. I don't know why, but clearly there's a massive link. I don't know if it's the creativity or is the thing that our profession is dedicated to the rest of the people. the moment, the thing that we both need to perform at a certain point when the people is expecting from us, you know, and then after that moment of performing is moments of enjoyment. I think there's many links between the two professions, and it's all about enjoyment, ours and for the rest. Mm.
What, you're kind of like a big electronic fan, and you obviously, if you've got a lot of DJ friends, I mean, was that kind of like coming from your connection to Ibiza, or just because you used to go out a lot, or how have you met these people?
Yeah, actually, it's again, you know, with the restaurants that I was running in Barcelona, they were very famous restaurants, so many DJs were coming, you know, and we control the reservations list. We know who's coming and who's not, you know, who is who. It's very important to know, you know, who is sitting at your table to give them the best service. So every time DJs came over, for example, my first link was Alida Fire, who later introduced me to Rich and many more. And actually, they inspired a little bit the creation of Cooking in Motion. You know, I was working at the restaurants and they were coming every weekend to have dinner with us. And they would tell me, well, yesterday I was in this place, the day before I was in that place. You know, and I was thinking in the restaurants, you know, I was there in Barcelona loving that city because it was it's still part of my home, but thinking I would really love to be able to do that as well. So I think my DJ friends were a big inspiration for me to take the jump and open my own company and start this nomadic business.
So who did you say the DJs were that were coming to the restaurant there that inspired you a little bit? Like Richie Horton and who else?
Ali Dubfire, Richie Horton. They were probably the two first ones that really connected me with the rest of the community.
Uh-huh. And you spent some time traveling with Richie in the States. Is that what you said before?
No, actually, Susie was was representing Enter Sake when they did a tour in the States, and she was the sake sommelier helping Richie to introduce his sake in the States.
Mm-hmm. Such a good idea. I mean, when you did the pop-ups here in Ibiza, I mean, there was quite a few, aside from obviously the sake bar at his night at Space, there was also, you know, quite a lot of pop-up dining events. And I think, you know, that was the first time, I guess, that I really noticed that was starting to become a thing. And I guess that was around about 10 years ago. I mean, how do you feel that kind of pop-up idea evolved? Where did it start?
I mean, I think it was a really, really great concept, a really great idea, both introducing the sake at the club for the younger generations, because I think also it's a drink that, besides being very gastronomic, it's also a drink that is very clean to your mind, you know, in my opinion. And then the pop-ups, you know, mixing music, lifestyle, combining chefs with DJs, you know, bringing the people together in that kind of environment, and open up a new world for many people that maybe they wouldn't go for it in a different way. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's the same. You know, when we do the pop-ups, we try to find the ways to make it very interesting, so the people will open themselves to try, and usually, well, almost 100% of the reaction is always very positive. You know, it's they're finding something and they never tried, and they're willing to experience again.
So it's quite an experimental role that you have, really. And I think, like, you know, the theme of human connection is what this issue of the Sharaka Journal is all about. So I'm just wondering, you know, if the role that you play is so experimental, how do you feel that you perhaps build connections with, you know, every local community that you hit when you travel from place to place?
I mean, the beauty of when I travel from place to place is, like, I'm not traveling as a tourist most of the time, or I'm working back home in Ibiza, or I'm traveling somewhere because I need to do an event. So when I land to a new place, people is expecting me in a different perspective. You know, like, we usually visit many providers that we end up being good friends and maybe sharing food together, you know, like, artisans that are related to gastronomy or even music, that or even candle making. You know, in Japan, usually I work with a candle maker, artisanal candle maker, that usually provides the candles to create really beautiful ambience in all of my events. So that thing of traveling and working really makes a big difference for me to connect with the local communities where I travel to.
So what do you, you know, if you work with local candle makers in Japan, like in Ibiza specifically, you know, how do you change that up when you come here? What's special about, you know, the way that you handle that situation on an island like this?
Well, I mean, in Ibiza, what I have is a private space, same as in Barcelona. This also comes from the idea of Japanese culture, that you have a place where you have your clientele, and that's the only people that can come into your place. So only them can invite new people. So then usually I get my guests, I know who they are, or they're friends of my friends. So that's just the starting point. Then I try to create the whole experience related to that, as I mentioned, with the appropriate music, with the appropriate lighting. Usually when I know the guests, I know what's their favorite food, what they tried before, and I try to adapt the menus to make it better and better for them. And then the same when we do events in private villas or special events, you know, like we really put focus on the creation of the whole experience, not just the focus on the food.
Mm-hmm. So you say,
especially for example,
go on.
I work with a lot of ceramics. They have a massive collection of plates and glasses that I love to use, because it makes a massive difference, you know, where you eat from, the cutlery that you are using, the glass that you are from, where you're sipping. You know, I know most of the artisans that they produce the plates and glasses and cutlery for me. So for me, it's also very special. When every time I open the doors of my space or I go somewhere to cook, I bring all these items that they're special to me.
Do you use local ceramic artists in Ibiza to decorate the place?
Yeah, actually, yes. There's a few really nice ceramists in Ibiza, and I have a nice collection from them, yes. Yes.
I think that's really interesting because, yeah, I would say that there's a lot of ceramic art and work going on this island. So I think that's really beautiful that you, you know, have tapped into that as an idea and something that you want to bring to the table on Ibiza. But how would you say that traditions or cultures here, you know, impact what you decide to work with, or the way that you decide to create, or but also maybe the way that you actually decide to serve the food or create the ambiance?
I mean it, going back to Ibiza, you know, like I've been going to the island for party for many, many, many years, and what I've seen is like a massive shift of the island towards also the organic agriculture. There's a massive movement. And then again, ceramics is doing new things, you know, like in the end, there's a community that I can tap to nourish myself with a lot of things very interesting for me to create better experiences for the guests. And that thing, I don't know, if maybe I wasn't looking for it in many years ago, but right now I feel that there's a constant new opportunity for me to relate and collaborate with people in the island that is interesting to create the better experiences.
Mm. I mean, how do you feel about this new kind of regenerative agriculture movement that's happening on this island? Because obviously that must deeply impact, you know, the offering that you can bring to the table for people in a very positive way.
Well, I feel very grateful that my concept, you know, like, is very limited. So I'm not cooking for hundreds of people. I'm cooking for a selected group of people, so I can really go and get all these ingredients and make the best use of them. You know, like when you're running a restaurant in the beach doing 300-400 people, clearly there's a lot of limitations regarding the the products that you can work with. But if you know your providers, you plan ahead, you know, like you organize yourself and you know what you're going to be using, then you can really make a lot of use of these amazing products that they're happening on there, and also help them to know, to understand what's the potential of what they can do. You know, like this is a collaboration basically, and I think it's not only good for our guests, you know, it's good for the island, you know, because before the island was only focused on a tourism that maybe it was not ideal, and right now I feel that there's a lot of agrotourism hotels that they are booming, and that's really, really amazing, you know, that seeing a different kind of tourist coming to the island.
Where are your favorite places to go and get, you know, regen products or produce? Where do you normally go shopping?
I mean, for example, that's a producer that I love to mention because it's a beautiful story. It's called Coronda. It's a strawberries. That is a farm of strawberries in San Miguel. So the grandfather of Rocco was a Spanish guy that moved to Argentina and started planting strawberries in a land called Coronda, which now is very famous for strawberries in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And now the third generation after his grandfather, Rocco, moved to Ibiza, and now he's growing strawberries in Spain. And their strawberries are amazing. You know, I use them a lot. I think it's a great story to tell.
What's so special about these strawberries?
Well, the varieties, I think the sun, the soil, you know, like I hope you can try them and you will understand why I'm saying this, because you know, that's something also that makes it for me when I'm traveling and tasting, and people is always trying to show me what's the best in their different locations, you know, like I try ingredients that are really, really amazing. So when I try something that is outstanding, you know, sticks in my mind and I want to use it over and over. And these strawberries are really, really amazing.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to have to try those, and you'll have to send me the name of that as well, because it sounds like it's a good story. I think, like, in terms of like the island influencing, you know, what you design to be locally sourced, seasonal, organic food, which is kind of, you know, what we should be encouraging people to also buy on the island. You know, how does that compare to other places that you travel around? And why is it that you love to make Ibiza your home for the summer?
Well, I mean, living in the cities, you know, it's very hard to have the contact with the supplier. In the island, you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing. You need to grab your car to go anywhere. So in the end, you know, you end up going through small roads, and those small roads have a sign about a farm. And then one day you have 50 minutes extra, and then you stop, you enter, you connect with someone, you try their food, the ingredients, and then you establish a relation. You know, that kind of things doesn't happen in the city. You know, and that's a magical thing of Ibiza.
No, I think that's, you know, beautiful. And I guess like once you have that relationship with those farmers and those producers, then they save you the best things and maybe, you know, even call you up and maybe tell you, like, you know, if there's anything special that they've got, perhaps, which must, you know, make a massive difference. When you say that you've got like a private space, is that like a secret space? Like, where is it?
It is a secret space. It is a secret space. It's in Ibiza town.
Okay.
It's actually my kind of my creative space, you know, and the place where I store all my massive collection of plates it's my creative space, because when I do consultancies and when I'm preparing for doing events around the world, you know, I try to test the dishes. I do also a lot of restaurant consulting, so creating menus for restaurants. And I need a space to have my books, my music, my time, and that's a private space with a table for 8 guests that is only open for people that I know usually, or people that is recommended by my friends.
It sounds very exclusive. I love it. It's very, I think that's just intriguing. And that, you know, obviously places like that do exist in Ibiza, but, you know, trying to get an invitation to one of these places is always a bit of a challenge. As you said, you like a challenge. But I think in terms of, you know, the melting pot of different influences and, you know, all the different cultures that exist here, like in summertime, it's very much, you know, bringing in an international audience. So how do you, you know, go about finally your kind of creation of getting like a harmonious blend that also reflects the island spirit, but also kind of caters to such an international community that come here in the summer?
Well, I mean, sometimes the guests are requesting a specific styles. Most of the times the people knows me and nobody even ask what I'm gonna cook or what I'm gonna prepare. You know, like they give me free like liberty to do what I wanna do, and then it's about me feeling what I want to do. I don't know why I come constantly saying to myself, you know, like why don't you just do the things that you know how to do? But I'm constantly wanting to try new recipes and new things. So. And shifting constantly, but at the same time, I'm trying. I love to be in nature, so I'm constantly in contact with the season and the products around me. So I'm always trying to include them in the menus, especially when I am in Ibiza. Of course, when I travel around the world, I research to understand what the ingredients are in season, and I try to adapt to that. But being in the island, as I said before, you know, when I'm going to the beach to take a swim, I'm looking around the island through the window of my car, and I see certain flowers that I can use, certain fruits that I know that they're in season. For example, usually in April, there's a lot of loquats in the island that they go to waste because nobody eats them. But for me, it's one of my favorite fruits in the world. And I'm usually preparing a lot of sauces and preserving for the rest of the season because it's an amazing product that is actually right there on your hand and you can use it and it's free and it's amazing.
Wow. And what, you know, do you any foraging then? Is it, do you ever like, you know, go out somewhere on a hike or go for a walk and see something that you think, I think that would work perfectly tonight with whatever you have planned?
Yeah, constantly. I mean, in beginning of the spring, you have pine cones growing it's very interesting to make infusions. And now in the winter time, the whole island is full of bloom, oxalis blossom, which is a yellow flower that you will see in every field, which has a taste of green apples. You have wild rosemary, you have wild thyme, you have loquats. In summertime, the figs, you know, I do a lot of thing with the fig leaves. There's really a lot of ingredients. I mean, that now they are into my repertoire because I use them every year. Also, for example, I think one of the first memories of magical ingredients that I have from Ibiza was going around with a chef friend called Sid Shanti, which was a DJ that moved to the island to play music, and then he became a personal chef. And going around the island with him on a march with the windows open, you know, enjoying spring, I could smell the aroma of the orange blossom, azar. And I remember a technique that I learned in El Bulli in 2007 when I was working there. That is like an infusion, making a reduction of orange juice, mandarin juice, olive oil, and then you infuse the flowers into this reduction, and it's like the most amazing nectar of azar that you can imagine. You know, and those things, you know, you can only do in a land where there's flowers all around you.
That's so true. There's just so much abundance, really, I think, in terms of, yeah, all of the incredible things. I mean, I also know Sid quite well from his days of creating food on top of a nightclub. I mean, he's mad as a box of frogs. I love that man.
Yes, exactly. Well, he's actually my first friend in Ibiza, and my private space actually is his old kitchen. So
where he made the chili sauce. Ibiza hot sauce.
Exactly. Yes.
Interesting. What a small world. I mean, I've been out foraging for kumquats for him on many occasions, and nisperos and all sorts of different things for his sauces. He's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Have you any...
Sorry,
go on.
That was a really fun story. Actually, the way I met Sid is because Ali the Fire was doing an event, I think, in the Ushuaia Hotel. And Sid was the chef in charge of providing all the ingredients and kind of helping out. But Ali was coming from a tour, so he didn't have time to come and do all the preparations. It was Ali and Carl Craig doing the event. So Ali asked me if I could go to help. So I arrived one day prior to the event, and Ali wanted to serve oysters. So I met with Sid, and we end up in the parking lot of McDonald's, you know, tasting oysters from the oyster man. I don't know. I'm pretty sure you know him as well.
Yes, I do.
So that's kind of my early memories of Ibiza 2013, you know, coming to do an event for someone else. But meeting Sid was a highlight of that trip. And I can still remember, you know, like tasting oysters in the parking lot of McDonald's for the event. That was a big success. We served 100 people in the beach, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, the irony of tasting oysters in the McDonald's car park.
Yeah, that was funny. Very, very Ibiza eclectic style.
Very Sid Shanty, though, for sure.
Exactly, so Sid Shanty.
Captain Chaos.
and having fun while at it.
Yeah, well, always. There's always a lot of fun to be had when Sid's around. There's never a dull moment. Did you read his, have you got a copy of his book?
Yes. I have actually one of the few things that remain from Sid in his old space is this beautiful painting that is also in the book. That is a picture of Ibiza and all the different spots where to collect and the providers. Mm. And I always have the book there in the space for the guests to check it out.
Nice. I mean, as you said before, there's such a link between, you know, the pleasure, I think, of eating and food and creation, but also, you know, the general kind of idea of just infusing music and food. And obviously that's kind of exactly what he did with that book. So I think it's actually right there in front of me. I haven't seen it for ages, but now it's drawn my attention to it. I'm gazing up to my bookshelf and there it is. So I think, like, what other good stories have you got about, you know, maybe, you know, do you go out very much when you're on the island in the summer, or do you just not have time?
Yes, I mean, that's a beauty of what I was saying, you know, like, it's like for a DJ, when they spend three days on the go, you know, playing, working hard, but then is there time for enjoyment, you know? For me, it's a little bit the same, you know? It's like kind of like a reward. I'm a workaholic. I love to work, but then every time I finish an event, I try to celebrate that moment, you know? And also, that's the beauty of having also so many DJ friends when I'm traveling around the world at the same time, you know? Sometimes most of the times the events are Friday, Saturday. So when I finish the event, I just need to check out who's in town and then go out and meet them.
It sounds like a good life, but maybe a little bit dangerous at times.
Yeah, I know. Well, especially now. Time is passing, and I'm trying to keep focused on the work. I love what I do. It's my passion. So my responsibility is always, you know, take my guests and my work.
How did you discover Ibiza? Where was the initial attraction? Where did that come from?
It was back then when I was living in Denmark in 2010. I came back in 2011 to start working with Albert Adria. And when I was running the restaurants, as I said, Ali the Fire was coming a lot, Richie, and they were always inviting, you know, trying to they were actually the ones trying to create the link between them and the restaurants. So I gladly accepted the invitations because I love music. You know, it's actually probably the only moment in my life where I'm not thinking about food. So it's kind of like a break from my workaholic life. So it's kind of necessary from time to time to just go out and dance and have a good time. And I mean, even in the clubs, I'm still trying to see who's missing a drink or who's you know, what's necessary to be done. You know, I cannot disconnect completely, but I love the music and I love to dance. And that's a really moment for me to break from my work.
Beautiful. I think, yeah, it's a very busy mind that you must have if you're constantly moving from country to country and trying to plan all of that. That's, you know, that's a seriously fast pace of life to be thinking and planning and plotting and wondering like how it's all going to pan out. But I think, you know, you must be a popular man with the DJs as well, because ultimately they're always on the road, they're always in the airport, they're always eating out of plastic boxes. And that must be, you know, I wouldn't enjoy that lifestyle, for sure not. So I'm sure when they get back to Ibiza, they just want to eat like really healthy, amazingly tasty, good food, which I guess is why you're so popular.
I guess that's another link that the DJs have with chefs. You know, like we make the best food, and then we end up having no time to eat at all. And so with the DJs. So when the time comes to enjoy, we get together and we really enjoy that time off. You know, like because we kind of have earned it.
Absolutely, big time. I think any chef is, they don't seem to ever sit down or rest or relax at all. I mean, I know quite a few chefs on Ibiza and they're all very high producing people. It's just insane how long the hours are and how much time and, you know, effort that you guys invest into your creativity and all the wonderfulness that you bring to the table. I think it's quite interesting. I think specifically since the pandemic as well, though, that, you know, Ibiza has evolved into more of a gastronomic destination, because I think, you know, sure, we had amazing restaurants before that, but I think there was a real emphasis on, you know, what else can the island offer, particularly in that year where things were a little bit redundant on the nightlife circuit. So suddenly all eyes became, I think, for me and from what I heard from a lot of people that work in the, you know, the hospitality industry, that suddenly food was really like number one destination for people to place their attention. Did that change for you at all? Did you notice that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think besides that, the fact that also life stopped in many cities around the world, so also many chefs got time to think, you know, like, is this where I want to be? And then suddenly many of them decided to move and start their new life in Ibiza. So they brought their new influences, you know, they brought a lot of creativity and their experience in different parts of the world to the island, which is amazing, you know, like, yeah, definitely the gastronomic community has grown a lot, and it's a plus for the island and also for us, you know, because I would love that there wouldn't be much of a competition, more like a community, you know, like helping each other. But already the competition also pushes you to be better and to give something best to your guest. So it's a healthy thing that so many new chefs are also coming to the island to establish themselves.
Do you think it's more competitive? And, you know, obviously the nightclubs are quite competitive here, but do you think chefs are even more competitive?
I think maybe not so much the chefs. It's maybe the restaurant owners are more competitive than the chefs.
Okay.
I think they're very similar.
So when you do have time to eat in Ibiza, where do you go? Where's your little spot?
Good question. Yeah, I love to go to Hambre, I love to go to Nudo, you know, like this. I love to go to see Boris, the food studio in the center of Ibiza. Mm-hmm. The guys from in Santa Gertrudis, you know, the cocktail bar. I, no, I sadly lost the name. My really good friends, Chidas Bar, Mexican restaurant in downtown, because they were actually, I met Andreas, who is now the person behind the food in Chidas, which is a Mexican cantina. We met together in doing a pop-up in Moscow. Actually, that pop-up that was so complicated, he was the barman running the bar in that amazing pop-up, and which is, he's an amazing bartender, and now he switched and opened a cantina, and he's making really nice Mexican food. So, yeah, very casual places, actually. For fine dining, usually when I'm doing my events, I'm cooking for myself as well. So when I like to go out, I prefer to go to see my friends and just relax and have a very casual food.
That's another lunatic, actually, is Andres from Chidas. I met him in the summer. I did an episode of the podcast on cocktails and eating in the summer with the lady from Vino & Co., Rosa. She took me out for a night out and introduced me to him, and we never got out of there alive. That was the last stop.
First and last. He's an absolute genius behind the bar and behind the kitchen, actually, and he's an amazing character. I think I'm not sure if him and Sid know each other, but that would be an explosive combination.
I think it's best that they never ever meet. Do you they're doing some sake evenings actually over Vino & Co. Are you guys friends?
Yeah, I mean, when Rosa started selling sake many years ago, she was getting some sakes from us that we were not in the island. Everybody that supports the industry of sake is my friend, because, as I said, you know, we don't do it for the business; we do it for the pleasure and the proud of representing these breweries that we work with. We work with very small breweries, all very artisanal, with a lot of history, and they have it's almost like helping a chef friend that is spending 16 hours a day in the kitchen, they're spending 16 hours a day in the brewery. It's a very hard work. So anybody that works with sake and promotes sake in a positive way is my friend and has my full support.
What is it though about sake that's just so hard to make it then? Why is there so much effort and time and love that goes into it?
Well, I mean, of course, there's ways to do it and ways to do it. There's also massive breweries that they produce, actually eight from 1,100 breweries that there's exist in Japan, eight breweries produce 80% of the sake. So it's basically made by machines. The breweries that we work with is family run, you know, many generations. Some of them are 14 generations working in the same place that their grandfather was producing sake. Many of them, they do it the same way that it was done 10 generations ago. Many of them, they don't even have machines inside the brewery. And it's kind of cooking, you know, like you have rice that you need to wash, cook, then ferment with koji to create like kind of like a starter. Then control temperatures. There's a lot of techniques involved that they're very related to cooking, and it's a very labor-intensive work.
Wow, I had no idea. Plus,
plus, you know, like it's something that, well, now gladly worldwide and also in Japan is getting popularity again, but it's something that it's a culture that was getting lost, you know, and it's something, you know, like, it's like wine, you know, we've been doing wine for thousands of years in Japan, the same. So it's a culture that is really worth to respect and value and promote, because it's part of our culture as humans.
I think of all the things that you've discovered on your nomadic travels around the world, that seems to be the one that's like kind of won your heart, seemingly. Is that sake that you're drinking now?
Exactly. Kanpai.
Amazing. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you were being super healthy, but
yeah, actually, it looks like a water bottle.
It did. You had me fooled.
Actually, that something is funny because, you know, like people say that you should drink, what, 2-3 liters of water a day? But sake is made with water. And actually, the end result is over 85% of water. So I kind of do my percentage of the water that I drink and the sake that I drink daily to reach my 2-3 liters.
Turning water into wine. Amazing. Listen, this has been wonderful. Thank you so, so much. I know that it's late there, so I've kept you already for 52 minutes. So I really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure to chat.
It's my pleasure as well. I'm looking forward to meet you in person and share some food and sake together.
Fingers crossed. I will catch you on the island.
And now you have my direct invitation to my private space. So
okay. Amazing.
And actually, you already know the location, so it's perfect.
Exactly. I do, actually, because actually Sid's business partner, David Lindemann, is one of my best friends. So that's how I know Sid.
Actually, that would be actually amazing to have you, David, Sid, or
Tani.
That would make me very happy.
Okay, done. You're on. Sounds amazing. I'm in. Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening.
My big pleasure.
And we'll speak to you very soon. Bye for now.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Arigato.
Ciao.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.